Good afternoon. On a bright June day in 1779, Mr. Amos Fortune, the celebrated colored tanner of Woburn, Massachusetts, set out on his old horse Cyclops for a trip to Keene, New Hampshire. Strapped to his saddle was a load of leather, and as they jogged along, Amos kept telling himself he was indeed a fortunate man. I'm young in spirit, I got my good health, and I'm as free and independent as any white man. Then his fine old face clouded as he recalled the two good women he'd bought from bondage to marry, only to have God call him home after a little while. His third wife, Violet, if he could save up the money, was to cost him £50, and he knew there was no use in trying to beat down Squire Baldwin. Besides, that £50 also included Violet's little bright-eyed daughter, Celindia, and that was good, Amos thought, because this time he'd be buying freedom from slavery for two people. Take it easy there, he said to his horse. We'll soon be at the top of the hill, and then we'll rest for sure. Riding along in the bright June sunshine, Amos said to himself, I feel just like Joshua did, looking for the promised land. And reaching the top of the rise, he slipped to the ground, loosened the reins so Cyclops could graze, and then, shading his eyes, he took a long look into the valley below him. Glory be, he said reverently. It must be the promised land. And his eyes dwelt longingly on the green fields, the winding stream, the cluster of neat white houses, and the sturdily built meeting house, its lofty spire dwarfed only by a noble mountain peak. Climbing back on his horse, Amos Fortune resumed his journey, singing at the top of his lungs. And why not? It was June. He had a fine load of leather to sell, which would help him buy Violet and make her free, like himself. And after all, what did 69 years matter, now that they were behind him? It was the future Amos Fortune was thinking of, and the sign he awaited from the Lord. At Keene, New Hampshire, Amos found stabling for the horse, but no lodging for himself. So he shared the stall with Cyclops. Thankful that the straw was clean and that he had drinking water to wash down the bread he'd brought. Next morning, he hunted up the cobbler and delivered the leather. The cobbler, looking for flaws and finding none, said, I wish we had a tanner like you up here in this part of the country. We need one badly. Amos said, how far would men come to get hides tanned? Maybe 10 miles? Indeed they would, and gladly, to get leather like this. And he ran his hand over the smooth and supple surface. Why, if you hung out your sign up here, Mr. Fortune, you'd have more business than you could handle. Sign, up here. Was that the Lord's way of telling him that this was the place to start life anew? Amos hardly heard the cobbler when he said, I can't pay you for all of it today, but I'll give you some sort of security. Could you use any clothing? Amos had already been looking at a fine broadcloth coat and a beaver hat. He tried them on, and as they fitted well enough, he said, let's call it a bargain. On the way back to Woburn, they stopped to rest at the top of the hill. And again, Amos looked down into the valley that was Jaffrey. Then he raised his eyes to the mountain. Lord, said Amos, I hope I'm right in thinking you gave me the sign back there in Keene. But just to make certain, can't you give me another little sign so's I'll know for sure? Amos jumped for the reins because Cyclops was scared of thunder. But the old nag was grazing as though he hadn't heard. And nowhere was there any sign of a storm. Thank you, Lord. Thank you most kindly. I'll be moving up here next to your mountain just as soon as I can earn the money to buy Violet and little Celindia. Thank you, dear Lord. Thank you. It was November before Amos had the money to buy Violet's freedom. And on the 10th of that month in 1779, they were married. Amos proudly dressed in his broadcloth coat and Violet wearing a neat new homespun dress she'd made herself. All that winter, Amos worked harder than ever to get the leather finished before starting for Jaffrey. He wanted to be settled in New Hampshire before the sap rose in the trees, from which he would cut his tan bark. And with Violet's help, he finished and delivered his last order in Woburn. Then packing the tools, Amos loaded them along with the household things into a wagon. And with old Cyclops, they started for Jaffrey. It was a great adventure for little Celindia, sitting on the high seat between her mama and old Amos. She held firmly to her doll, which Amos had fashioned from cornstalks, while Violet kept a watchful eye on the lily-of-the-valley pips wrapped in moss and some lilac roots she'd brought from the Baldwin farm. When night came on, they camped like gypsies along the road because the tavern wouldn't take in colored people. They reached the hill on the fifth day, and they all got out so Cyclops would have only the wagon to pull. Halfway up, Amos put his shoulder to the wheel and helped, and then stood panting before the mountain. Ah, here they call it Monadnock, and 'twas right here, Violet, that God gave me the sign. And down there in that beautiful valley is where we're going to build our new home. The arrival of the Negro family in Jaffrey, New Hampshire, was noticed by several, and the town constable was summoned to tell them to move on. Amos, hat in hand, bowed before the officer and asked politely, "Could you tell me, sir, where I can find a tanner? I've got some hides here I want to sell." "Well, the nearest leather man I know of is over in Keene, but he ain't much good." "Maybe then I should settle here," said Amos, handing the officer a sample of his fine hand-tooled craftsmanship. "Oh, no, you don't," snapped the constable. "We don't want your kind here. Now be on your way. Get going." Amos squared his shoulders. "I understand you're doing your duty, constable, but I've decided to locate in Jaffrey. I'm going to open a tannery." The officer thought, "Well, at least they're not tramps, and we do need leather bad." Out loud, he asked, "How old are you?"
71.
"How long have you been in this country?"
"Since I was 15, sir."
"Have you been free long?"
"The past 12 years, bless God."
And Amos handed the constable his precious papers of manumission. After looking them over, the officer softened a bit. "Well, this is pretty rugged country to be starting up at your age. By the way, Mr. Fortune, do you go to church?" Amos' old face lighted up.
"Yes, sir. I've gone to meeting ever since I came to this country. And it was from the Bible that I learned to read."
"Well, then I suggest you go see Parson Ainsworth. He lives in that house across the common. He's the man to advise you." So Amos bowed and picked up the reins. "Come on, Cyclops. Just a few rods more." Reverend Ainsworth greeted Amos cordially. And when he'd finished telling his story, the parson smiled. "My good man, I've got just the place for you. It'll have to be cleared of underbrush, but there's a good brook. You can see Monadnock, and it'll be handy for your customers. Come, let's go have a look at it." They had barely got the wagon unloaded when some men with a pair of oxen appeared. Then more men showed up with axes and shovels. And before the sunset, a small piece of land had been cleared, and the frame of a house was underway. They slept the first night on a bed of spruce boughs, with twinkling stars overhead, and the music of the nearby brook to lull them to sleep. The first summer in Jaffrey, New Hampshire, was a busy one for the Fortune family. Amos got up before daylight, did the chores, and then went to the forest, where with barking mallet and peeling iron, he stripped the fallen trees and toted the slabs of bark to his new house. Celindia's task was to stack the bark in neat piles, and when it had dried in the sun, Violet ground it up in the small, water-powered mill Amos had constructed over the brook. He also put in pits where the hides were soaked for several days. Then Violet would scrape the skin carefully and brush off all the grit. Next to the washing box was a deep pit, which Amos kept filled with lime water, and here the hides were soaked for several weeks until they softened. To get tannin, Amos boiled roots and hemlock bark in the big copper kettle he'd brought from Woburn. The last thing he built was a drying yard where the skins could be stretched. Now he was ready for business, and as summer advanced, more and more customers came to leave their various kinds of hides to be tanned into leather. One day a young man rode breathlessly into Amos' yard and unrolled a cowhide. "I've brought this all the way from Peterborough," he said, "to get you to finish it by Christmas. I'm going to be married then, and I'll want the leather for my wedding breeches." Amos, fingering the hide, said, "You can have it soon's it's ready, son, but leather can't be hurried." Then he added, "This skin has already had one life. It takes time to prepare it for another, but I'll do my best." "I know that, Mr. Fortune. That's why I came to you." And off he rode. Amos took the skin and put it to soak. Later, he placed it on the beam, and going over it carefully with his scraper, he cut and shaved till it was even and uniform all over. Then he gave it to Violet for soaking in acid to loosen the fibers and make the skin adaptable for tanning. It was a long, tiring, tedious process, but a master craftsman never minds the monotony of his profession, and old Amos, sloshing around in his tannin-filled tanks, never complained, and the beautifully finished piece of leather was all ready when the bridegroom-to-be came after it.
During the winter, when it was impossible to work in the pits, Amos treated the small and lighter skins, tanning them with alum and salt, and with egg yolks, if they were to be finished white. He worked 6 days a week, but on Sunday he rested. And putting aside his own leather breeches, he donned velvet ones with silver buckles at the knees. The striped vest he'd worn for his wedding day was also saved for the Sabbath. And with his beaver hat resting firmly on his snow-white hair, and his wife in modest dress, and little Celindia in a pretty frock, they were indeed a fine-looking family as they walked proudly up the hill to the meeting house, where they sat upstairs in the special pews reserved for colored people. Amos Fortune joined the church in Jaffrey, New Hampshire, on May 21st, 1789, just before his 80th birthday. And a few weeks after that, he rode over to William Turner's and signed the deed that gave him 25 acres of land. There, beside a brook which ran through his property, Amos built a new home, strong and sturdy against the storms of winter. He put in new vats and built a bigger tanning yard. And Violet transplanted her lilies of the valley and the lovely lilacs. At 80, Amos Fortune had found the peace and contentment he'd been striving for. And to show his gratitude for the blessings that freedom had brought him, he called on Deacon Spofford to make his will. To his wife, Violet, Amos left all his property. Then he said, "I'd like a nice headstone for each of us, and I'll leave the inscription writing to Parson Ainsworth. He'll know what to put on them." "Will that be anything else?" asked the deacon. "Yes," said Amos, "there will." And he placed on the desk a sum of money. "Here's $100 to buy a silver communion service for the church, and here's $100 more toward the schools. You know, I never went to school myself." The will was drawn up and witnessed, and Amos Fortune went home with a light heart. Stopping in front of the meeting house, he looked toward Monadnock and whispered, "You can come for me any time, Lord. I'll be ready and waiting. And thanks, dear Lord, for all you've done for me." The money which Amos Fortune gave to the schools of Jaffrey, New Hampshire, was put in the bank, and today it amounts to over $1,000. And to perpetuate the memory of this Christian Negro, the citizens of Jaffrey have named their famous lecture course the Amos Fortune Forum. And as Amos would want it to be, it is free to the public. If you should go to Jaffrey some Friday night this summer to attend the Amos Fortune Forum, I suggest you step into the old burial ground next to the meeting house. There you will find the headstones of Amos and Violet with the inscriptions just as they were written by Parson Ainsworth. Sacred to the memory of Amos Fortune, who was born free in Africa. A slave in America, he purchased liberty, professed Christianity, and died hopefully, November the 17th, 1801. As I said last Sunday, you can find all the details of this good man's life in Elizabeth Yeats' beautiful story of Amos Fortune, Free Man.